It's very difficult for a human being to live meaningless. We need a meaning, but we cannot fabricate it. We have to find it, but to find it as a kind of reality. But, and it's still a big question, what is real, what is a reality?
I'm Michael Max, and this is Cheological. One of the most important lessons I learned about practicing medicine came from one of my teacher's idiosyncrasies. It was a quirk that I'm not sure anyone else noticed, nor do I suspect he was even aware of it. When something didn't go the way that he thought it would, a patient responded in a surprising way, or life in general caught his attention and invited a reevaluation of thinking, beliefs, or assumptions, he would pause with a quizzical look, kind of gently shake his head back and forth while both frowning and smiling at the same time, and mutter under his breath, wrong again. I found this wildly amusing. This was an accomplished practitioner, deeply experienced and marinated in decades of study and practice, the kind of doc that knows what he's doing. And yet, on a regular basis, I'd catch that mutter of, wrong again. It wasn't an accusatory directive, and it lacked a self-emulating vitriol of, I'm stupid, nor did it have the acrid edge of resentment or blame. It was more that he was surprised and a bit amused as he recognized that things were not like he'd thought. It contained more information than judgment, along with a whopping dose of self-reflective awareness. I'm not sure how he was able to be open to information that most of us would have easily swept to the side. The little things that did not fit and could be ignored as the annoyances of everyday life were easily dismissed as irrelevant outlying data points, but these moments caught his attention, made him pause as he reflected on how his ideas about what was going on did not quite match up with how the world was unfolding in the moment. There was something in the way he was both gentle and strict with his attention and would use these pinprick moments of illumination to prime and tune his own process of learning. Being wrong in clinical practice is unavoidable. We're taught from our first week in acupuncture school that we're going to get it wrong. Everyone gets it wrong. In fact, getting it wrong is part of getting it right. Teachers would regale us with stories of how they thoroughly misjudged a case and how their treatment took a patient further from the health and vitality that they were seeking. These are great teaching stories and completely in alignment with some of the oldest of our classical texts on medicine that not only tell us how to treat disease, but they also tell us how to recognize mistakes and how to correct them. It's helpful from the outset to know that missteps are unavoidable in the practice of medicine. It's part of the soup. There's no way to learn medicine other than by doing it and using the mistakes along the way as necessary course corrections. Still, hearing the stories of experienced practitioners makes for good entertainment. The question of how we keep ourselves together in the midst of a situation that's coming apart, that's another matter altogether. Wrong again. It takes some internal fortitude to sit with these words in such a way so as to open up our curiosity and at the same time dial down the reactivity that so easily arises when we thought we were knowledgeable and in control, only to find that our understanding was incomplete. It requires a kind of surrender to step into the stream of uncertainty and remain attentive and aware. It takes practice to calm the voices we have that are so ready to point out our flaws and our failings. It's easy to fall either into self-criticism or an inflated sense of, I knew that, when our egos are confronted with its limitations. We're wrong a lot in clinic. Ask any doctor. They will tell you it's part of what puts the patina of competency on a practitioner. Often, our missteps are like the small course corrections that pilots make when flying from one destination to another. Our mistakes are similar to the more of this, less of that in how a chef works out a new recipe. Like in any relationship, we are working out the boundaries of what fits, what doesn't, what unexpectedly helps, and what surprisingly hinders. The side benefit of this is that we can help our patients to feel less anxious as they navigate the foreign country of illness. They often hold themselves accountable for their troubles. If only I hadn't. If only I'd sooner known. If How could I have been so stupid? It's all too human to fall into blame when a simple, wrong again with a chuckle would keep us more connected to a productive sense of inquiry. Wrong again, it doesn't mean stop. It means start again. It means our fallibility is not a weakness, but rather a sign that we're pushing the edges, that getting it right without the lessons of the ways that we've gotten it wrong leads to an incomplete understanding. It's not about being right, but learning to get it right. There's a kind of poetry to Chinese characters. They give hints and clues about the names we give to the world. They tell a story. In a moment, we're going to get into a conversation with Elizabeth Rocha and dig into the meaning and etymology of certain characters, but more importantly, discuss what these characters might mean for us as practitioners of Chinese medicine. I love digging into the meaning and nuance of characters. It's like drinking really good wine with friends who appreciate that sort of thing. And when sitting down for this kind of a conversation with Elizabeth, it's like sampling the top shelf stuff. But first, a couple of things. I'll be mentioning this from time to time as we move forward with some fundamental changes that are happening behind the scenes with the website. We're in the midst of updating the Chiological website in some ways that will allow us to create more connection and community. So if things look different over the next couple of months, you'll know why. We'll keep you posted as the major changes occur. I think you're going to like what the folks down in the Chiological Sound and Motion Labs are cooking up for you. A word here from the sponsor of today's episode, Real Mushrooms. We know that Chinese medicine is thousands of years old. Well, fungi are the wisdom of a billion years. Did you know that the DNA of mushrooms more closely resembles that of humans than of plants? National Mushroom Month is celebrated each year throughout the month of September. It's got me thinking about fungi, and I'll be back to tell you more later in the show. Okay, let's have a look at some of my favorite Chinese characters and what they might mean to us about practicing medicine. Elizabeth Rochette, welcome to Chiological.
Thank you, Michael, for inviting me.
So happy to have you here because I love talking about the Chinese language, and it seems like you have a little experience with the Chinese language.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a good one or an expertise, but I have a long one.
You have a long one.
A long one, yes. I started when I was just 20 years old, when I met Father Claude Lard. And now I am well over 70, so it's more than half a century. Sure, it doesn't mean that I know a lot of things, but I am used to Chinese characters.
Well, you know, it's funny. Sometimes the longer we live, the less we know. I mean, we've learned a lot, but we recognize so often how much we still don't know. How did you get started at the age of 20? Whatever drew you to looking into Chinese?
Father Claude Lard, I met him by chance, and he was just coming back from Vietnam in China, from Vietnam in the 67. And I was fascinated by the way he had to speak of Chinese philosophy, approach of life. And it fascinated me. He was translating the Tao Te Ching, the Book of the Way and the Virtue, and working on other things. And so I start to study with him, and I start something that is never done. I start directly with classical Chinese written language, and it's just some 2 years after that I start the spoken language. So, and immediately after, I'd say 69, something like that, we met Dr. Jean Schatz, who was a French medical doctor and acupuncturist, and we start to work together, not only on the Chinese philosophical texts, especially Taoist, with Father La, but also on the classics of medicine. And we work together, and we start to try to understand what it means exactly, and how the understanding of the classical text of Chinese medicine was linked to the civilization and all the other works and text, making a kind of ambience, a cultural environment in which they were produced. And so giving us a kind of vision of life, vision of the of a living body, of a, of, what and the, also questioning us, you know, what it takes to be a human being, what difference does it make, especially, and so on. So a lot of questions that we don't necessarily have to accept what the Chinese from 2,000 years ago were telling, you know. As I always said in my lecture, it's not because it was written 2,000 years ago in China that it is true. Yeah, sure. But at least it gives us some questioning and some ways to reflect on this question from another perspective. And that is even without even studying Chinese medicine or philosophy, this is a kind of enrichment. And it is in fact what we may take from one from the other as several approach, civilization, language, culture, not to be in competition, not to start to try to sell the most disgusting garbage that we can produce, but just to offer one to the other the best of our view on life and human being.
So listen, I want to ask you, we're going to get into some characters here in a little bit, but you know, I love that you started with the classical stuff. You were reading these old books. You were looking at getting a glimpse back in ancient China of what it means to be a human being. Now, that is a big question.
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge question. And even though it's a huge question, I would still like to start with that. What are some of the things, especially early on, as you were beginning to get interested in this work, that you started to uncover about what it meant to be a human being? And how has that unfolded in your life since?
Yeah, sure. Because the fact is that it's very difficult for a human being to live meaningless. We need a meaning, but we cannot fabricate it. We have to find it, but to find it as a kind of reality. But, and it's still a big question, what is real, what is a reality? And nowadays, it's more than ever a question with all the virtual and so on. So we are suffering right now also of a deficiency in our approach of reality, what it means. I will not give a definition. I will not make a class of philosophy, you know. But if reality is what I think or what I experiment, if the reality is depending on the I, there is no meaning that I can find really for my life. So, and now I have to find this meaning in a kind of, in another approach, perhaps in the depth of myself, because I participate to this life, which is a cosmic life. So, and in this case, I find it as well as observing all what happened around me as in the depths of myself, when I try to remove all kind of disturbance, you know, something, sure. And in this case, what do I find? I don't know. Myself, I'm a little bit Taoist, but it's not exactly so far the deepest meaning. So I'm a Christian. So, but once you have said that, what it means that the deep meaning for me is in the love manifested in the person of Jesus. That's all. And it's even too much, because what is that? What he is? What is God? I have no answer. And it's impossible to give any answer, any definition. But there is. That's what, so. And in the Chinese approach, yeah, there is something which is similar. As there is something certainly similar in a lot of other approaches. But after that, we differ a little bit. So, and even in China, the Confucian approach is not exactly the Taoist approach, if you want to keep this kind of categories, you know. So they are more or less accurate, but never mind. So, but in the Taoist, yeah, it's certainly what is the Tao. It's also what is behind and beyond everything and everyone, every life, but everything is depending on that. It is. And we cannot say anything else. So, but on that, we may rely on some kind of building observation. For instance, if I want to speak of the Chinese approach that I know the best, you can look in nature and you can look at the unfolding of life in nature and you can see some kind of order and you can call it an heavenly order, a natural order. And that is also inside of you as your beginning, as the very root of your existence. So, and this kind of order is not something that a constraint, something that I impose to me. It is the movement of life itself. You know, exactly as in the bamboo. When you look at the bamboos, they are very vivid. They are lively. They grow very fast, but without losing their diameter, you know, not too much. Yeah, at the end, of course, a little bit. But sure, how do they do that? Because they know how to rest, how to stop making the bamboo knots, you know, the nodes of the bamboo. Yes, able to stop when it is time to stop. And so to renew, to regain. So they last like that. So there is a rhythm. Rhythm is one aspect of qi. Rhythm is perhaps the first aspect of qi. Qi is always yin-yang, well manifested. So, and so this rhythm is like the measure in music. It is not a limit which is imposed on a kind which is very lively. It is a condition of life.
So a couple things. I want to make sure that I'm following this, because there's two things that really caught my attention. The first was that there's a natural order to things. You could call it a heavenly order. And all you have to do is look into nature and you'll see it. Us human beings are not separate from that. There is an order within us. I was going to say reflective of nature, but that if it's reflective of nature, then that means we're somehow standing outside of nature. And we don't stand outside of it. We exist within it. And so it's not a reflection as much as it is, I'm not even sure what the word is that I'm looking for, that we're already part of it. It's like we don't need to find it because we're already part of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the reason why sometimes in the Tao Te Ching or in the early Taoist text, we can translate, of course, some sentences or some expression as a companionship with the way.
A companionship, that's it. That is a great way of describing it.
You know, but what it is, after that we have several schools, and we have to enter in a school if you want to practice. And if you don't practice, we are in risk to err and to be lost. Yeah, sure. And also there is differences. In the Taoist sensitivity, they will rather be on what is in myself behind of all that. What is life? It manifested for a time with this form of life, which is I, presently, but which is a lot more. And I participate by keeping it at the best or merging it with the life of the cosmos. But in the Confucian approach, they will prefer, I don't want to cut very strongly between both, but yeah, as a kind of sense of a propensity, they prefer to remain aware of what they do, what they ought to do and to be. And there is something that we find regularly. It's what makes me, what I am, is also the model for what I ought to be and to become. You know? Sure, so we have some kind of, for instance, differences. I am just speaking of two of Taoism and Confucianist sensitivities, not to go in other things, but of course, it's very simplistic. Yeah. But it's also what we find. So how much we need to keep control, to be in control of my thinking. But my thinking, and that is said everywhere, is always also a danger. It's part of the specificity of the human. If I don't think, how can I be a human being? You know?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood that last part. The specificity of what?
Human being.
Uh-huh.
We think. Yeah, we have, but and through my thought, I may have also a discernment. So, but if my discernment is enlightened, is accurate, or spiritual, for instance, Shen Ming, so I know when to stop, and even when to stop the process of knowledge. Because if I don't stop the process of knowledge, the knowledge that I have in my head, in my brain, takes the place of the natural life.
So we're back to that bamboo again, where it grows node by node, right? In Chinese, you could almost say ibu ibu lai, right? Step by step, right? It knows when to begin. It knows when to end. One ending is also a beginning. And because it knows when to start and when to stop, it can grow in this very linghuo, this very lively way. It's strong unto itself. And what I hear you saying is that when it comes to being a human being, there is a place for us to discern and be making sense of the world. And then there's a time when we should stop with that. It's like there's a time to plant and a time to harvest, a time to start and a time to stop.
Yeah, because coming back to your first question about the human being, what is the difference between a bamboo and a human being? And that we found that in text as soon as the 3rd century BC. So is that I don't only have a life and chi and knowledge, ability to know and to memorize, but I have discernment, which means that the bamboo grows with stopping at the nodes naturally, spontaneously, instinctively. Yeah. But there is no discernment. But the human being doesn't have an instinctive life as such because he participates to this spirit of heaven or whatever you call it, you know. There is something in the human being which makes them responsible for their own life. So the responsibility of the Confucian, who is responsible for oneself, for his family, for his country, for the world. You know? And also, even if you are in the Taoist sensitivity, yeah, the spontaneity is not, okay, I do what I want, like that. It's I come back to my original nature, which is exactly this point. But sure, behind knowledge and but I need to know how to do also. Yeah.
So we need both.
Yeah, after that, there is different sensitivity. Yeah. We may have another approach. I say, for instance, in the beginning, I say myself, I am more Christian than Taoist still. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I hesitate a little bit, but okay, so far I cannot. Because, and it's not by choice. It's never a choice.
It's never a choice.
No, because if you have the choice, it's not real. If I can take this and that, as when I go to the market and I can take either grapes or peach or a melon, whatever, you know, what is the value of that? No, it's because I cannot help. It's obvious. It is the only thing to be done. It is like that. No. I cannot do something else. It's not exactly a choice. It's not a choice. I may choose after to work, to practice, to do this and that. But basically at the roots, it is just something that you cannot avoid.
Are you saying that we don't have choice in this life?
It depends on the meaning of choice. We have a lot of choices. But we do not choose the reality. And if the reality is in front of you, it is. You know?
But we can choose within the reality.
After that, we may choose to have a lot of choices. I can do this or not, and so on. I may decide to follow this path or not. I may, of course, there is a lot. But I do not decide the reality itself. What is?
I want to come back to discernment for a moment, because this is, I mean, it seems to me that anyone who's practicing Chinese medicine in a clinical fashion uses their discernment every single day, and they use it in a very specific and hopefully very skilled way. When you think of the word discernment, What's the character in Chinese that we're talking about here?
It depends. But quite often, it's a character Ming. It's a character which looks like made with the sun and the moon.
So this is Ming. You're talking about Ming? So like Yang Ming the Ming.
Yes. And it's very interesting because, of course, it looks like made with the sun and the moon. But in fact, if we look at the original graph of this character, it is the light of the moon entering in a room. And so, and you have to imagine, for instance, that is my imagination, but it fits with the meaning of the character. So you are in the darkness during the night. You cannot see anything. You cannot know on what you put your hands. Oops. But if as a sudden, and of course there is no electricity and nothing like that, of course, but if a sudden the moon breaks out of the clouds and the full moon gives a very great light inside of the room, as a sudden, you have no doubt. You see things obviously. Yeah. You are enlightened. Yeah. So, and in Ming, there is something like that. It is a light. It is also to see clearly, to be clear and seeing, clear sighing. It's also clear, evident, manifest. It's a way you can perceive things. And sure, and you have this kind of light. So in you, in yourself, for instance, if you are able to remove by the practice anything that can block your eyes to see where the light shred, So if you put curtain on the windows, you will never see what is in the room because the light of the moon will never enter. So this is my story. Yeah,
yes. And unless you take away the curtains, and then you can get the light.
And all the curtains, they are, for instance, violent emotion, passion, inaccurate desires, and sad ambitions, and the wrong meaning of the term. So all what is devouring your vitality and preventing you to stop and to go with life, with the rhythm of life. Yeah. So when we remove all of that, sure, we have this kind of enlightenment and we have this kind of brightness because we become also enlightened.
Well, because we understand. I mean, my understanding of that character Ming, and it's a great character. And it's used in so many ways. You know, it's seen as brightness, it's seen as understanding. I love it. You know, like if you're in China and you're trying to figure out how to work a new computer, it has a Shuoming Shu, right? It has an instruction manual, right? And that character Ming is the Shuoming, right? So in some ways it is an instruction manual. It's like if you understand, you know, then you can see clearly. But I want to keep working with this a little bit because this idea of discernment. Now you've really got my attention. So you were, and I love the image here too as well, that the light of the moon is what's helping us to see clearly and understand because there's light and it's kind of an enlightening experience. You can have curtains that cover that light that could be the emotions or habits or, you know, many different things. Again, I want to come down to how do we discern? Is there another character that can help us with, say, being aware of where the window is and doing something to take those curtains away?
Oh, absolutely. There is several characters which are possible, of course. One of them may be which is knowledge, to know and to be aware even to build a kind of consciousness, to understand. So, but you know, there is so many characters. This one of the knowledge is one of the most frequent.
Yes, and which character is that again?
Zhu.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's like the earth or the scholar over the heart?
No, that is a wheel. Which is totally different. This je is an arrow and a mouse. You know, it's a... yes, of course, it's difficult to describe a character.
Jersher the Jer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's to know knowledge.
Yes, to know something, to understand it.
Yes, to understand. It may be intellect or it may be awareness. You know, it's to recognize also, you know, to perceive. And you perceive the same kind of story always. When you see with the sense organ, if our eyes are welled, so if there is some kind of blinder, you know, as in the window, so we cannot perceive accurately. We think that we know, but we were unable to clearly see. So we have a knowledge which is a misinformation. Yeah.
Misinformation.
Yeah, sure. So the quality of the knowledge always depends also of how we are able to remove all the blinders.
So what helps us to remove those blinders?
So it's difficult to say because there is several approaches. But first is, some said, in a human being, it is normal to want to know what is, you know, not to be in delusion. So, sure, even if, of course, I am not speaking with the psychology or modern psychology, that yes, there is some people, or sometimes we prefer delusion, but I'm not speaking of that. I'm speaking a kind of average. A human being rather wants to know what is, tell me what is, I want the truth, I want to know what it was, and so on and so on. Sure. And it's also one of the great, a great impulse for progress. Yeah, sure.
I mean, I see this in my patients all the time. They've got a problem. They may not know what it is. Nobody can find what the problem is. They've been to many different doctors, and they just want to know what's going on with them. So this is the juror we're talking about. They want to know with a juror kind of knowing about what their world is.
And also, which is also important, I think, in the Chinese, in classical China, is generations of human beings building something, you know, the ancient sage of antiquity and so on. So, or masters, sure. So, differently, according to your sensitivity, of course, Taoist, Confucian, and so on. But still, there is a kind of something which, yes, I think it's also almost everywhere in the human civilization that we are not starting from nothing. We are continuing a kind of movement of humanity that is built from generation to generation for a long, long time. So, and there is there's teaching that we can have from the ancient, and of course in China, the respect of the elder, yeah, more or less, but yeah. So, and sure, it's important to know, for example, in the Confucianism, it's very important to study the old master. So, those who knew, they have a kind of clear vision of things, how they were, how it is. And it's the reason why they were able to put this vision of the movement of life in the universe in some kind of pattern that we may call Li, ritual, the Li of ritual, proprieties, you know, or in hexagram, if we are in the Book of Change, or even in written characters, you know, and books and texts, whatever, yeah. It's a kind of help to find a kind of guideline.
So when I hear you say guideline, and you just mentioned one of my most, well, I could say favorite characters in a way, but it's also for me one of the most troublesome characters that I puzzle over, which is Lee.
Sure, but which Lee? You know, you are speaking of the Lee of principle or the Lee of ritual?
I am talking about the Lee of principle.
Yes, yeah, that is really nice. And because it is, it's a very interesting character because it's made with a Jed. The first meaning, as you know, being the veins visible in the Jed. And from that, sure, it's it becomes very early the intrinsic, inherent organization of all form of life at each level, you know, and also a kind of principle of organization informing the development of any form of life from each of the myriads of beings as at the very level of the cosmos. And so after that depends when you are in time, or if you are in the 3rd century BCE or 11th century AD, depends in what kind of text, depends with the context. For instance, Tian Li, the heavenly principle. So it's we will find more of that in the Taoist text at first. So sure, but anyway, it is in fact another example of what makes me what I am and what is a model of what I ought to be.
You know? It to me seems like this pattern that connects things.
Sure. And not only connects things, of course, but it's a pattern, the intrinsic pattern for everything, which, of course, is connecting, but because this pattern is mine, but is also analogous to a more general pattern or to a cosmic pattern. After that, you know, depends on the context, sure. And also, it's a pattern which is both, if you like, on the side of what I may call biological. It's a pattern of my body, of my vein, of my skin, of the texture of my skin. It's on Foli, the Chinese medicine, as well as it is a pattern for my moral behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes through us at all levels.
Exactly, it is the same. And another time we can see here how we, in China, in the classical Chinese, we cannot really separate what is biological or physical, you know, as a body, the biological, and moral as a behavior. It's a very, very large meaning of these words. Sure, which is fascinating because it is exactly what we have in the Chinese medicine. But it is totally natural. And it's really different of what we call psychosomatic.
The mushroom or fruiting body is the organ of sexual reproduction for fungi spores. Through our Chinese medicine lens and the notion of essence, we can recognize the importance of the therapeutic potential in the fruiting body of mushrooms. When selecting a medicinal mushroom supplement, don't settle for anything less than actual fruiting bodies. Real mushrooms are pure organic mushrooms. No grain, no fillers. Text PARTNER to the number 55444 to get pro pricing and direct shipment to your patients. So this is, I want to dig into this a little bit and focus it down into the clinic in a way. I want to run an idea by you and just see what you think about this. Because I've studied a little Chinese, just enough to get myself in trouble. But there are some characters that just like they stick in my mind because it's, you know, it's like a really good poem in a way. If you know a really good poem that calls to you, you can read it at different times in different places and it will say different things to you. You know, all good art is that way, I think. And so when I think about Li, I also think about coherence, how things are put together, how they hold together. You were talking, you know, we're just talking a moment ago about that you could have something going on emotionally. It can affect how things are physically because of the Li that gets called psychosomatic in English or, you know, from a Western medicine idea. I often think that in clinic, what we're doing is we're helping to like attune the li of a patient so that they are in greater coherence with who they already are.
Mm-hmm. And also, if they are in a greater coherence with themselves, it's because they are in a greater relation or a better relationship with the source, the origin of their life, and which also makes the relationship with the other at the root. And because we have, say, in relationships, there is a kind of relationship which is at the surface. Yeah, we have always this kind of relationship, but there is also another relationship which is at the root and which is behind the world. And that exists always in the human relationships at different level. There is people, we have this kind of very deep connection, but with some other, even if we don't know them very well, we can have it also. But we cannot express exactly with word. But we know that we understand it when the other because of this common root, this common connection to what is.
And so by working with a person's li, helping them come into more coherence of their own, let's say, patterning and who they are, maybe their shoulder gets better because they came in for shoulder pain, but their relationship with their spouse gets better and their digestion gets better.
Yeah. And you do what you do is to harmonize the chi. Yeah.
And but so this is one of these things. I hear that term harmonize the chi. It's a very nice thing that we all learn in our first week of acupuncture school. We can go decades talking about harmonizing the chi. And so often when I hear people say harmonize the chi, or when I hear myself say harmonize the chi, I think to myself, what the hell are we talking about?
We are talking about the kind of patterns that we have to the order of the interaction of chi in a human being. One example, a famous example, is the five phases or agents or elements, you know? So, which is exactly, which may be called li also, yeah, the five li, for instance, so in chapter five. So, and sure, it's because it's a pattern of the normality and the order and disorder of the interaction of chi. And so I have this pattern and I know how it is when it is in the limit, in the limits of what is acceptable for my life. For instance, my heart may beat a little bit too fast or too slow. It's still enough in harmony with what I am to keep me alive. But at a certain point, the disorder will just trigger a lot of difficulties. And if it continues, it will be the limit of the possible harmony or harmonization, and I am dead. You know, to harmonize, we have always to refer to a pattern, and a pattern which is a general one, but that I have to apply to this individual with both all what I have in my knowledge, my intellect, my memory, my techniques and sound, what I know, and a kind of emptiness in myself, because without this emptiness, I cannot be totally present to my patient. I cannot totally be present to all the signs which are shown, the sign of chi, and I can become blind. My knowledge blind me.
Yes.
As a practitioner, we know that perfectly. We always have both, and we have to cultivate both daily.
You put your finger right on it. I feel like this in so many ways is the essence of practice in the clinic, that there's the part of us that has the knowledge, the juror, okay? And we need that, and there's a place for it. But without the emptiness, the juror can blind us. We cannot see what's in front of us without that emptiness.
Yeah. And we accept with no condition. It's just. But that is also a daily working.
Okay, so emptiness. Are we talking about Kong?
Shu. Yeah, rather shu.
Which not like sure and shu to shu.
Shu? Not as?
Naika Shu? Which Shu are we talking about?
Shu with the tiger stripes and the... how do you can explain that? Oh, Shu, which is a deficiency, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Shurgun Shu to Shu.
Yes.
Okay. So the emptiness that we're talking about here, for those of you that don't understand Chinese, is the same Shu as deficiency, but we're calling it emptiness here. We're calling it. So this is fascinating, Elizabeth, because in my training as a Chinese medicine practitioner, I'd always think of like Shu as like, oh, Shu is a problem. We got to fix that. There's not enough of something. And what I hear you saying is, there's an element of Shu that we can hold and we can be in, and it will help us to not be blind to what our Zhe shows us.
No, you see, Shu, the emptiness,
yes,
the void, vacuity, whatever you want to call it, is absolutely necessary for all life movement, even if we do not see it. I will take two examples. For instance, you have a traffic in the streets. It's normal to have traffic in the streets. If you don't have traffic, it's because there is a confinement or something awful happening. Yeah. So, sure. So the normal thing is, but if we have a traffic jam, it's a bad fullness. If we have a nice fluid traffic, it's a good fullness. But this traffic may be good only because there is an empty space always in front of each car. You know? And if you take a water pipe, it's the same thing. The water can flow in the pipe because of an emptiness, even if we don't see it, because there is no difference between emptiness and fullness when they are perfect. You know? That is a first point. No. The second point now is Shu. Shu is just the condition of this movement, which is life. Yeah. And without it, I cannot live. As I cannot live also without all the substances, all the things implementing my life, which is on the side of the fullness. So, and even in medical text, chapter 1, chapter 62, the sentence is popping in my mind. You may have sentence telling you, once you have solved the problem of the bad emptiness, the deficiency, for instance, in the circulation of the meridian, you have restored the emptiness.
Restored. So now I'm thinking, I'm so glad we started with bamboo. So the middle of the bamboo and part of what gives it its strength and its linghuo supability is the Shu at the heart of the bamboo.
Oh, yes. Shu is... And it is when it is empty that it is not breakable. But that is another thing. It's another perspective. Sure. But what is a definition of Shu, of emptiness of the mind, for instance? If I take it in a Confucian text of the 3rd century BCE, so I may say it's when there is nothing preventing me to receive what presents itself to me.
Wait a minute. Say that again.
When there is nothing preventing me to receive what arrives, what happens as a thing, as a being, as an event, whatever. All what happened, all what is around me and presenting to me, I am able to accept it. So that is emptiness. Nothing is blocking me to receive anything. As it is, of course, as it is. Which is a nice one. And it is in a Confucian text, one of the greatest Confucian thinkers, Lunzi, you know, chapter 21, yes. Sure. It's and that is exactly what you have in the street or in the water pipe. Nothing is stopping the movement.
Or the acupuncture clinic.
Whatever. Or nothing is preventing me to receive what does exist, even if I am not aware of that. I receive it. It's one of the source of intuition, what we call intuition or whatever you want. But I have to constantly work on myself to improve myself by an inner working. If you want to be a therapist, not only a care, so for instance, to care or to give some treatment, yeah, but to be a therapist, I don't know if it is exactly the same difference in the meaning in English and in French, but it takes more. You know? You can be a caretaker, there is nothing wrong, because everyone has his own vocation, you know? And nature, so there is nothing bad, nothing wrong, but we have to know what we are and what we want to be. So if we are a therapist, we have to cultivate ourselves in the way of the therapist.
Yes. Well, just a few minutes ago when you were talking about that we need the knowledge and that we need the emptiness.
Yeah.
I mean, that totally makes sense. You can look at that as another expression of yin and yang. Now, I want to talk about what connects those things up. And I got a suspicion it's this other character that I find very interesting. You see it all over in many different ways, and that's Tong.
Oh, Tong. Tong of to pass, to circulate, to commune.
Yes.
Yeah, this one. Oh, yeah, it's a very, very nice one, because it means, in fact, to circulate, to go through. So to pass, and it may be very physical, yeah. So to go through a passage, or even in the body, to go through the intestine. So, to go, as a to defecate, for instance.
Yes, también.
Yes, absolutely. And but it's also, it may be also to communicate intellectually, you know, to understand. It's very often we have this meaning of understanding, but which is not exactly the same thing that we have previously with the character Je. Knowledge, which is also to understand with the knowledge. Tong is rather to understand, because I communicate. I commune with it. Even it may be, I may translate sometimes as to commune, you know, to commune, to be in the kind of communion with. Sure, to have a full...
To be with.
Yes, to be with, to... that there is no obstacle between all what is passing from you to me, or from heaven to me, and me to heaven. So, and that is also necessary for life. Each time that there is something preventing this circulation at any level, there is a problem. If my intestines are no more making my the feces passing, I have an occlusion. I'm in trouble. So, and if my blood is no more circulating, it's another problem of flowing. If my defense, my constriction or nutrition is not passing everywhere in the body, I am also in trouble. If there is the passage, a communication between heaven and me, or the chi of heaven and my life is not good, so I'm also in problem. This is the title, for instance, of the chapter 3 of the Soen. Sure, it's all life of living beings. So it's a continue to live because of this communication with Heaven Chi, you know? And so it is a character which may be translated only according to the context.
Yes. Well, this is the wonderful thing about Chinese medicine, Chinese language too, for that matter, that the context is so vital to really understanding something.
It's the same in any language.
Yes, I suppose it is, now that you mention it.
Sure. Yeah, look at spirit in English.
Context?
Yeah, context of spirit.
Context of spirit.
Yes. If I go in a grocery to buy some spirit, it's not exactly the same thing as the Holy Spirit, or that my spirit, or the spirit of the nation. It's the same English word. It will not be necessarily the same Chinese characters, you know, and the reverse, and so on.
Say that again. I didn't quite catch that.
Sure. If you take the word spirit in English,
mm-hmm.
you need to have a context. to know what it means.
Yes.
White spirit is not exactly the same thing that Holy Spirit.
That's an aspect of spirit.
Yeah, but it is not the same.
Not the same.
It's not the same. And it will not be the same character or the same word in another language. But we don't pay attention to it because it is natural for us in our own language.
Yes, it's like living in water. It's like a fish in water. It's hard to be aware of what we're living in. So I want to dig a little more into Tong in the context of opening, connecting, and communicating Zhi and Xu.
Yeah. Oh, Tong has a lot of other meanings. For instance, an adultery relationships, illicit sexual relationships can be Tong also. You need the context, of course.
Yes, of course. But the context here is someone in clinic and they're working with their Xu to be present and they're working with their Zhi, the knowledge that they have, to help somebody. How does Tong come into all of this?
You may use it at several levels. What is the communication with the patient? It's exactly that. We have a communication that we master. I know how I behave. I have to even to pay attention to my attitude, to my body. It's a kind of a practice for me also. If I pay attention to the way I move, not only I give a better signal to the patient, so I improve the communication, but I work also on my own chi, Mm-hmm. I communicate better in me, and it communicates better with the other one. But also at another, as I communicate with what I can say and so on, but there is also this communication at the level of my emptiness, if I can say that, Sure. And the patients, they don't know, but they have it. And the part of the signal that is given to the chi of the patient comes from this place in us that we cannot know and we cannot master, which is what it is, which is a result of what we try to become.
As we're having this conversation, and I'd not thought about this before, but I'm going to watch for it in clinic. It occurs to me, on a good day when I feel like I'm working both with my Xu and with my knowledge, both with the emptiness and with the knowledge. Sometimes I get a sense that the emptiness in me connects with the emptiness in the patient, and then something happens.
Yeah, but be careful not to think too much of it. You will destroy it.
Exactly.
But continue to work on it. It's difficult, yes, because we love to be in control.
So when in that space of Xu, of emptiness, we can kind of glimpse, maybe just a glimpse from the side of our eye, but no more than that. Because otherwise, now we're bringing the knowledge in, and that fills the emptiness.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And after that, we don't... And why do we need to have even this glance?
I suspect the dance itself is part of the healing. That's a great question, and I don't have an answer.
Oh, yes.
But why do we have this dance is a great question, to take and work like you might work at learning a poem.
Sure. I think that, as it is said, my understanding of the text is that we do not have to focus on it or to try to remove it. We have to focus to continue to work on oneself, and one day it has disappeared, and we even did not notice when it disappeared.
Wow. Well, Elizabeth, I can't believe an hour's just about gone by, and I feel like we're just getting started. Oh, my goodness. Anything else that you'd like to share with us today before we say goodbye for today?
Oh, my goodness, I don't know. I say, as usual, I will say just that for me, this Chinese classical medicine is very rich, and it gives us a kind of approach of the movement of life, and of what it takes to be a practitioner, a therapist, a human being, what it is to treat a human being. We don't treat a human being as we treat things, or we repair something, you know. I don't want to speak of animals because it's a question, it's an open question and a difficult one. But and I see that there is a lot of questions as well as answer or idea or techniques or whatever that we have in classical Chinese medicine. And if we are able to keep them, this medicine alive, it will participate in the building of the medicine of the future. You know? But it has to remain a real medicine, not a kind of science or of the Western medicine. You know? Has to remain a real medicine in itself, with its own corpus of knowledge, its own ways to make a diagnosis, its own treatment, and its own researches.
We've been given a tremendous gift, you know, that we can live this life, and what's been passed on to us has been passed on to us. And what I hear you saying is it's partly our responsibility to nourish that, attend to it, and make sure that it goes along.
And also not only to transmit, but to participate to the evolving. If it is only transmission, it's already dead.
Yes. Participation. We could do a whole hour on participation, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah, we can.
Thank you so much for this delightful time together.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It was a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for your help.
I think the thing I love most about learning another language is not simply that I rename the world with new sounds, but that my very process of thinking changes as a foreign grammar and phrasing forces me to parse the world in novel ways. Chinese characters hold much in their pictographic representation of reality, and when you combine that with the nonlinear philosophy of China, it's possible to get a glimpse of the circular worldview that underlies our medicine. Our medicine is not simply about technique. It's about a perspective on nature and our part in it. All y'all that are members of the podcast and support Geological with a monthly or yearly membership, thank you. Your support is foundational to Geological being a resource for our community. All right, friends, that's it for today. As my friends in Taiwan would say, 随时在来哦, stop by and visit anytime.